What is it that you think that doctors are missing since you've been on the other side dealing with insurance? I'm sure denials, people not listening, not having enough compassion.
I think that the medical education system and the healthcare system train the humanity out of doctors. The system is set up to treat pathology, disease, and that is all very important. But the thing is that people are not containers for pathology. They are people. So yes, treat the pathology.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
But don't only treat the pathology. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that you're treating a person.
It's a coping mechanism, right? Even mm-hmm. me as a trauma surgeon, I see literally people minutes from dying all the time.
Right.
And it's
right.
like, okay, I'll see you later. You move on to something else. Mm-hmm. But that right. patient, that family, like they're still holding on to that.
There's a balance is what I'm saying. Right. It's not all or nothing. You can be an effective human and an effective physician.
Folks, your exciting new medical career, it's just been hit with a serious illness or injury that stops you from earning a paycheck just when you need it most. Check out what Jamie Fleischner of Set for Life Insurance said back on episode 176 about having disability insurance early in your career.
The real reason to get it early on is really twofold. One is to protect your insurability. So if you are healthy and you can obtain the coverage, you also pre-approve yourself to be able to buy more in the future. So down the road, as your income does increase, you don't have to answer additional medical questions. All you have to do is show that your income is increased and you can buy more benefits at that time. No medical questions asked.
Protect your income, secure your future. Check out setforlifeinsurance.com. What's good, everyone? This is another episode of Docs Outside the Box. I'm really honored, very excited to have Kristen as well as William Flannery, also known as the Glaucum Fleckens, also known as Lady Glaucum Flecken, Dr. Glaucum Flecken. I don't know how many syllables you're going to have in that, but...
You get so tired really, of saying that. Yeah. I know,
well, do you get tired of saying it? Because I'm sure how many times you got to introduce yourself or you get introduced by it and someone is messing that up.
I enjoy actually hearing other people try to pronounce it. That's a little joy of mine. So
you can see the nervousness in them and see how many times they practiced it.
Yeah, that's right.
It does make people nervous.
Oh yeah, they you know, it's just spelled like it sounds. It's easy.
If you're German,
to an ophthalmologist,
yeah, exactly.
Excuse me, it's and I think let's just start from there. You know, yeah. I think that you know the jokes. The comedy skits. And I oftentimes blame you guys as the reason why like my productivity goes down and stuff, right? Like I can't get anything done because I'm watching your TikToks all the time and I'm watching your podcasts right now all the time and stuff. I'm really interested because they always say like what makes comedy so good is that there's a lot of truth that's said in jest, right?
Right.
And the skits that you're doing right now, whether it's on, you know, insurance companies or residency or whatever it is, right? Like we're just in a different time with medicine, right? Mm-hmm. Like if someone were to ask you like in general, like what does your skits, what are your TikToks, you know, the reels, what do they say about medicine in general for physicians? What would you say? Are we in a good place, a bad place?
I think we are in a turning point right now. I think that there's a lot of, you know, the old way that things have been done that I think physicians have really participated in building the medical system that we have. Like we're part of what we've built. Right. But now you have a new generation of physicians that are, you know, early career trainees, med students, they're coming up, they're seeing all the problems in healthcare. Part of that's because of social media. Yeah. I think they just know a little bit more of the inner workings of how the healthcare system's functioning and what needs to change. And so I feel hopeful, honestly. I know it doesn't seem like that because I have this character, Jimothy, that has the worst job in healthcare, which is working for United Healthcare. But so sometimes my content can get a little depressing, but my goal isn't really to depress people. It's like to be like, hey, look at this thing that we can change. And so that I hope I leave people with at least a little bit of optimism.
I don't know about optimism. I think that's a stretch. But it does point out, like, hey, this is actually pretty ridiculous.
Well, because a lot of the things, in a really effective way. Yeah. Well, and a lot of the things that with the healthcare system, like, I didn't know some of these things. Like, I didn't know that there was a ban on physicians owning hospitals. Like, I didn't know. Really? Yeah. Yeah. There's a, there,
I knew
there's
the
a Stark moratorium.
Laws and stuff, but I didn't know you couldn't own, you couldn't own a hospital and stuff. Really? Wow.
There are some physician-owned hospitals out there, but I forgot what year it was that this went in. It's been like 20 years now, but there was a moratorium on any more hospitals being owned by physicians, and there's a lot of corporate interests to keep it that way, as you can imagine, because United Healthcare is buying up hospitals, private equity is buying up hospitals, so they really don't want physicians to be able to own hospitals, but there's no good reason for it. So it's topics like that that I came across just in trying to figure out, you know, some skits that I wanted to do, and people email me and be like, hey, did you know that this is a thing? Like, you should do a skit on this. So I get some of my ideas from people just emailing me and like the comments from my other videos. And so I really love those topics where like even healthcare professionals may not really know what's going on under the surface, you know? That's where I really enjoy bringing in the education piece along with the comedy.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting is the younger generation, because I'm like the last bastion of Gen X, right? Like I'm 78, right? So I'm like 2 years removed from being a millennial.
You're almost a millennial. Yeah.
Right. Almost.
Can we claim you? Can we claim you?
If you want to, you know, I'll put my hand up, you know. But like I am like that last generation that's kind of like that last, you know, those last years where it's just like, I'm still close enough to be jealous of millennials, but also at the same time, I still feel like I can't exactly act like a millennial because I feel like something will happen to me, whether it's be, you know, through what has been beaten into me through residency or even fellowship and so forth. So there's a level of almost like jealousy or just like, wow, that's really cool that you guys grew up with the internet or grew up nowadays, even, you know, younger than the millennials, they grew up just oversharing. So the ability for them to talk about things and challenge things on social media, like that skill, like it, I don't have that skill, right? Like they have that skill. And I think that's really great because that the folks who are even coming before them, they get a view of things that they may not necessarily got when I was training, right? It's just almost like everything is very gray, so to speak, and like hard wall. It's just about institutions. And I think now with what you're doing and what other people are doing in social media, like it really, it's almost like you guys are bringing your own brand back into medicine, right? Where like, it's almost like you're walking around without, like the largest logo on your white coat is your hospital. But now it's like social media allows you to kind of separate yourself from that and put the brand on there. So I think that we're in a very interesting time for that, you know? So
Yeah, I think it's really focused on like making healthcare human again, right? And that's a weird thing to say in the time of AI. But what I mean is maybe humane is a better way to say it, of like, hey, we don't have to do it this way, actually. And I think that, you know, these systems that are so difficult, they thrive when people don't feel like they can talk openly about them. And so social media has been really useful in kind of breaking that wall and letting people know how things really are and share with each other and have some transparency. And then there's, you know, more power within the people when you can do that.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
So, good. You got the kids to sleep? Well, I hope so. If not, they'll be coming down here any second. So, in my mind,
if they're in there and the door shut, that's good enough.
There you go. Yeah,
that's oftentimes what happens. So we get our editors to actually edit out the banging on the doors and stuff.
We
got that skill.
That's good.
Yeah.
So listen, I'm going to ask you guys a question because I know, you know, the Super Bowl just passed and stuff. And, you know, I find it interesting. Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl. Texas Tech. He didn't graduate from. Did he graduate from Texas Tech or he left early?
We both did.
No, he spent 2 years Patrick there. Patrick Mahomes. Yeah,
he was two years there. But that's where you guys graduated from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my adopted son, Patrick Mahomes.
Don't even get him started, please.
Oh my God, I love him so much. he is my Mahomes boy. He is.
I think it's like an unhealthy amount of obsession.
I love him.
It's bad.
He's Jordan.
It's a problem.
I think.
Well, because as a Texas Tech alum, obviously, like anybody who went to Texas Tech has adopted the Chiefs as their team. That being said, any place that he went, if he were to switch to go to another team, I would follow Patrick Mahomes.
You love him,
even anywhere. The Jets.
Oh yeah, no, no. I'd wear green. Yeah, absolutely. I'd wear the okay. You know, whatever the color green is for the Jets. But anyway, big fan.
Anything Patrick Mahomes does has to be on. Our television.
I was a mess during the Super Bowl, though.
Oh my god, he had to leave the room.
I was so nervous.
I had to bring him back in.
I was walking around the block.
He does this thing. He like twirls his hair when he gets nervous, and he was like,
I want. So I've been trying to explain this to Kristen because she does not understand. She doesn't have a competitive bone in her body. So she doesn't, you know.
I do, but not about sports or games.
So I was trying to explain fandom to her.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's just when you love a thing so much, like for me, it's like, I love Texas Tech. I really like that we went there. I enjoyed our time. That's where we met. It's a big part of our lives.
Sure.
And so, with Patrick Mahomes, like you have the most famous football player, like ever right now, and the most successful football player,
the brown one, right?
Oh God, yes, that's brown, brown ball, elongated kind of oblong,
pig skin,
exactly.
Got two little pointy ends,
and it goes through. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So the fact that you have this person who is such a huge ambassador to Texas Tech, it's just that's partly why I love it so much, because like he's the most famous person, one of the most famous people out there, and he went to the same college that we went to. That's so exciting.
It's so romantic. It's fun.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
I'm never going to explain this
I
to her.
Almost as much as I love you, Kristen.
Well, thank you.
Well, you guys share Texas Tech. We share Kansas City. Kansas City because that's what we did our medical school at.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha. So you guys are rooting for him too.
Yeah.
Now, from there, after Texas Tech, you guys met. Then from there, you guys went to New Hampshire, of all places.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we did. Went to Dartmouth.
What's in New Hampshire?
Dartmouth.
A good question.
Well, I guess that's the only thing in New
snow.
Snow and Dartmouth.
Snow and Dartmouth.
At Dartmouth.
Yep.
Yeah, we saw moose. Moose
there's
are
some
in
hospitals
New Hampshire
up there. Yeah, there's some moose. We did see a few of those.
Is that plural or
meese?
Mooses.
Yeah.
Moose.
Mice.
Exactly. So. Yeah, we spent 5 years up there.
Yeah.
5 years.
Oh, wow.
And then moved on to a place that has less snow, but is probably more cold, Iowa.
No.
Yeah, Iowa
more
gets
ice, for sure.
Polar. We lived through several polar vortices.
But Dartmouth was so cold that we would walk in from the parking lot where the student parking was way out at the back. Yeah. And you'd walk into your building, and by the time you got there, your whole face is frozen. Your nose hairs, your tear ducts. Heaven forbid you washed your hair before you came to school, right?
Like, it was rough.
Now you have icicles.
Rough. And we grew up in Texas, so it's like that's not.
I don't
our,
have that problem, guys.
That's so. Not. Our
yeah,
thing.
You hair. Have been. You'd have been a little wind chapped, I think, though. Yeah.
Let me look because me and Renee were talking about this, talking about you guys before the episode began, and you know, like when she came down the aisle, my heart almost stopped. All right. Me, like my heart almost stopped. But damn.
I think I know
Kristen,
where this is going.
I ain't never heard we're joking, like, I ain't never heard of a girl kickstarting your damn heart. Sheesh. Kristen. Uh-huh.
Well, listen, we got two little kids and the month before we had taken on a mortgage. So I wasn't about to let him get off that easy.
Oh, no, you don't.
Exactly. Yeah. You get back 50, here and finish this. What you started.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, obviously on a serious note, like testicular cancer twice, cardiac arrest after what, 10 minutes? Recovery, full recovery. Wow. Like there's a certain side of medicine that you guys see now, particularly you, Kristen, that I think a lot of docs don't get a chance to see. I know for me, you know, I haven't experienced it as a patient. I experienced that, you know, from my mom's standpoint or even Renee from her parents' standpoint. Like, what is it that I think, or what is it that you think that doctors are missing since you've been on the other side dealing with insurance? I'm sure denials, people not listening, not having enough compassion, like specifically for doctors, what is it that we're missing that we're not getting from the other perspective?
I think that the medical education system and the healthcare system train the humanity out of doctors, right? Mm. Like you're encouraged to learn to suppress your emotions and suppress your empathy and put things in little boxes. I think it's well-intentioned because the intention behind it is so that you can do your job because you see a lot of really difficult things. And if you were to just fall apart, you know, you wouldn't be an effective doctor. But I think it kind of swung too far in that direction, right? And there's regulation is an option, right? There's a healthy amount of just like understanding your emotions, recognizing your emotions, and learning how to regulate your emotions in appropriate ways and at appropriate times. And that's what you should be taught. But instead, it's just stuff it all down and keep it in there and, you know, keep it to yourself and try to forget about it and never talk about it. And I think that does harm to patients and their families as well as to you all, right? Like, I don't think that's healthy for anybody. So I think that the system is set up to treat pathology, right? And education is about pathology, disease, you know, sickness, what has gone wrong. And that is all very important. And obviously, like, that's what, at the end of the day, that's what we're here to get rid of, right? But the thing is that people are not containers for pathology. They are people. So yes, treat the pathology.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But don't only treat the pathology. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that you're treating a person, mm-hmm. you know, who has that pathology, who is dealing with that pathology. And that comes with a whole host of other things. And that person is connected to a whole host of other people who that is also, if that pathology is also affecting those people in a different way, you know? Yeah. So all of those pieces are just sort of, you know, there's so much to learn about pathology that's what it ends up being 100% of the time. And then your work hours are so crazy, right? That you don't have time to stop and reflect or feel your emotions or regulate your emotions. So I see how it all ends up happening. And I don't think it's like malicious intent on anyone's part, but that's kind of the gap, you know, that gets created is those are the mm-hmm. types of things that fall by the wayside.
It's like it's a coping mechanism, right? Like even mm-hmm. me as a trauma surgeon, I see literally people minutes from dying all the time.
Right.
Or you give people these really bad pathologic diagnoses. You have cancer or you have this, you have that. And it's right. like, okay, I'll see you later. You know, we'll have right. support for you. And then you just walk out. And then mm-hmm. as a physician, you walk out the room, you feel like you move on to something else. Mm-hmm. But that right. patient, that family, like they're still holding on to that, you know?
Right. And that's changed their whole life, you know, right. in that yeah. moment. But I think, you know, people are afraid of emotions, right? Particularly the negative ones. And you don't have to be like, emotions are just information. They're just telling you something about what's important to you, right? And like when I was going through childbirth classes, the one thing that was actually helpful about childbirth classes was they told me, you know, yes, it's going to hurt. There will be pain, but it's not the kind of pain that you need to be afraid of, right? It's normal, expected pain. And it doesn't make it hurt any less, but it helps.
I'm like, yo. I'm like, I don't know
about that. No, it hurt real bad, guys. I don't want to do it again. So. Yeah, but it hurts. But it doesn't have to be feared, right? We can separate pain from fear, mm-hmm. and pain from, you know, all this just psychological discomfort, right? And right. I see the same thing in healthcare with doctors and their patients. Like, it's okay. If that makes you feel sad, you're a human. I would be worried if you don't feel sad, given some of the things mm-hmm. that you see. But that doesn't mean that you have to run from being sad and run from the situation.
You need to run to a room that you can go cry in for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to have to get through the rest of the day and then maybe you can go cry.
Right, unfortunately. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be able to function. I'm not right. saying you don't. No, you're right. You can just like cry whenever you need to, but like, but there's a balance is what I'm saying. Right. It's not all or nothing, right? Like you can be an effective human and an effective physician.
Mm-hmm. Now, William, in your situation where it's a visceral dichotomy, right? Like provider, one second, yeah. and then literally a patient, and not just any type of patient, like you're waking up in the ICU and so forth. What happened?
Yeah.
You know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what are
Well, fortunately for me, you know, waking up in the ICU, my career as an ophthalmologist didn't afford me any extra experience that I could really relate to.
But your board scores were dope, though.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah, I'd say you don't really have to set a foot in an ICU to be able to perform well on the USMLE. But,
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I'd say that the biggest... the biggest learning experience for me was going through the health insurance, the medical bills, that was totally different than what I expected, you know, cause I, you know, with the cancer stuff, yeah, I was a student and a resident. And so I had good health insurance. I've had good health insurance this whole time, fortunately, well, for the most part, but as a student,
it's
like
kind of an oxymoron, that phrase.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
As good as you can have, I guess.
And yeah. So, but it was pretty clean. Like I had surgery to take out the testicle and that was all. Insurance paid for most of it. I didn't have to deal with a lot of back and forth. The cardiac arrest was like, that was a much bigger deal because I had now an ICU stay. I had all these procedures that were done on me. Some catheter was put in me that costs like $24,000, something outrageous. I don't even know what.
Oh,
I think it was
gosh.
The one
you were able to get an itemized bill.
I did.
He asked for
it. I asked for it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you, that wasn't easy.
Yeah.
But so there was so much more that went into it. Then all of a sudden, I had all these surprise bills. You know, because I forgot to check. Make sure that the doctors who were going to be at the hospital were in network before I had a cardiac arrest.
I saw that, yeah.
You went to wrong emergency room and I see
you. Know. Oh, right, I did. Right one, wrong doctor.
Yeah, wrong doctors. Right.
The hospital was in network.
My right. bad. My
but
bad,
not the doctors.
Cigna. My bad, Cigna. So anyway, and it was a 9-month process. 9 months. Between starting like about, you know, 3 weeks after I got home from the hospital of just emails and phone calls and trying to get this like tens of thousands of dollars worth of bills covered that my insurance wasn't covering. And you know what ended up doing it? Social media posts.
Mm.
Of course. So I had to use this.
Leave it to embarrassment, public embarrassment to
right.
get people.
Yeah. Right. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, that's what it takes. And I was very fortunate. Obviously, I had this big platform already, so I could draw mm-hmm. attention to myself. I didn't feel good doing that, but I was so frustrated that that's what I ended up doing. And unfortunately, it works.
Right.
And that tells you a lot, actually, yeah. about mm-hmm. how these insurance companies think about social media. They care about public perception, right?
Yeah.
That's like the one thing that you can kind of hit them on is okay, we don't want too many people saying bad things about us. Mm-hmm. So let's reach out to all these people complaining on social media. Maybe we generate a little bit of good PR for ourselves. So it's
and you'll know when they reach out, they're like, DM us.
No, they don't want to public.
They
yeah.
don't, they're trying to get right. it off of there as quick yeah. as possible to get yeah. it back to a private channel.
So, And what really, as a physician, though, it just really drove home like what my patients deal with, what our patients deal with mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis, right? It's bad enough to have to recover from a critical illness or an accident or whatever it may be that got you in the hospital. And then we put this on top of that. Be like, okay, you're also gonna have to deal with the psychological, the emotional turmoil of having to fight these or figure out your medical bills and why this is paid, why this isn't paid.
And it's also confusing. Like you had the knowledge yeah. of being a physician within the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's
it was still confusing.
Yeah.
So imagine when you don't.
Yeah. Right. It's even worse. So
you know, my mom was in the hospital recently and Renee always asked me, well, like when I took my mother to the hospital, I don't say that I'm a doctor at all. Like I just roll up there and I'm there. And I don't like to use that doctor name. because I like to watch and see.
Yeah, don't pull the rank unless you have to.
Exactly. Right. I don't pull it unless I have to, because I just want to see how she'll be treated. Mm-hmm. And I think what I've seen from the other side is, I think a lot from a doctor perspective, we talk too technical to our patients.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there talking, you know, my mother had an arrhythmia and they're just talking about all these different things. Mm. And I'm just quiet. And I may ask a question here or there. As soon as they leave, I ask my mom, so mom, like, do you know what's going on? She's like, no, that's what I have you here for. Because I have no clue what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, so I think it's like so many different things that you can take away, particularly from your perspective.
But I have the opposite. I have the opposite problem with my mom. Like the minute she sees a healthcare professional, she's like, "Do you know who my son is? Have you heard of Dr. Glockenflecken?"
This is true.
Did you subscribe?
Yeah.
Every.
Did you know he has a newsletter?
It is her favorite thing in the world to tell med students, residents, nurses. It doesn't matter. Let me tell you about. She could be going back for open heart surgery, and she's going to be telling the anesthesiologist before she gets put.
Count
this,
back
you know,
to 10 from 10, man. 10, 9. Do you know who my son is?
Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody on their toes. I know that for a fact. If I was dealing with you, I'm like, oh, make sure. You know.
Well, I mean, the platform, right?
Oh man. Yeah.
Might work against her. Might make everybody nervous.
I know. That's the. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's. I would rather be a little bit more anonymous.
You should have thought about that before you put your face everywhere.
That's probably true.
No matter where you are in your career, you've seen patients your age or younger get seriously injured, have a long-term illness, or even have a mental health issue that affects their ability to work. Now, what if that was you? No, for real, what if that was you? Without disability insurance, how are you going to replace your paycheck? In episode 176, Jamie Fleischner of Cephalife Insurance explains why the best time to buy disability insurance is during your residency.
Most physicians acquire their disability policies during residency, and there's several reasons. First of all, when you're younger, you're able to obtain the insurance because they ask you a whole host of medical history. And so you usually don't get healthier over time. Usually you get less healthy over time. So when you're healthy, it's easier to acquire the coverage. Number two, it's also less expensive because it's based on your age and your health. You're not getting younger or healthier over time. So you're at the ideal time. The earlier you get it and the younger you are, the less expensive it's going to be.
So whether you're a resident or you're an attending, it's never too late to protect your income. Renee and I, we use Set for Life Insurance to find a disability policy that fit our needs and budget. So what are you waiting for? Check out setforlifeinsurance.com. Once again, that's setforlifeinsurance.com. Speaking of putting your face everywhere, question.
Yeah.
Are you still practicing as an ophthalmologist right now?
I am, yes. I did 11 cataract surgeries and did an afternoon clinic. So I practice 4 days a week still.
Yeah. Which for an ophthalmologist is considered full-time, actually.
That's true.
It's not even a joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my, if you guys balance, are watching on YouTube, like, how is there such a thing? Like, how does this work? Balance, practice, social media, husband, dad, dog owner.
Yeah,
you can
see
him.
You can see your dog. Your dog's like, what's going on in there?
He's like, you gonna let me in here or what?
How does that work?
Oh man, good question. I'm still figuring it out, but obviously
I figured.
Yep, obviously Kristen picks up a lot of slack.
She's the special sauce.
Oh, she is, absolutely. I mean, a lot more the ways than one, more than just saving my life. She, like, you know, just you know, keeps she's the engine that keeps this family going.
Yeah.
But as you know, when I first started this, it was a lot more simple. It was more straightforward. Now I was just like telling jokes on Twitter. I was filming a skit here and there. As we started adding more things like the podcast and the news, wanting to do a newsletter, and we had to get help. And so I had to learn. This is a big deal for me because I have never been a group project type of person. Mm. I just like, this was just my thing. I was just going to do the comedy thing. And I have total control. No one has like thinking selfishly, no one has my ability to post on social media. Absolutely not.
No one can possibly do this.
Then like me.
That's right.
Meanwhile, I like have no idea how Instagram works. I'm just like, I
have a marketing background, but you know, who needs that?
So a big part of it, of finding that balance between all these things, is figuring out how to let go. Mm-hmm. How to let others help me and ask for help. And so Kristen ended up quitting her job at the time to do Glockenflecken full time. And she keeps the business running, also does a lot of creative stuff. We obviously do the podcast together. Mm-hmm. We have an employee. We have a production company that helps with the podcast. So I definitely don't want people to think I do all of this myself.
It's a team effort.
It is absolutely a team effort. And it just has to be. And to get to where we want to be with this, you know, it really did require, there's no way I could do it alone. So yeah. That's the answer. Yeah. And I'm still not sure I have the right balance. I don't know. Still trying to figure that out.
It's still very busy, even with all of that.
Yeah. You know, and I do have to occasionally, you know, do an eye exam or two. So,
you know, I say that there's no such thing as balance. You just kind of, whatever the priorities are, you just kind of make it happen. Yeah. And you hope at the end of the day that, or even at the end of life, that you've given enough priorities to the things that matter. You know,
I do like though to when I talk to audiences and, you know, do speaking and stuff, I like to talk about how, you know, medicine, it should be an important part of your life if you're a physician, but it doesn't have to be your entire life, right?
Exactly. Like
it's okay to want to do other things.
Right.
And okay, try saying that as someone from a Gen X, right? Like that's another concept as a millennial that y'all could say, you know, but that's an amazing point. That's the exact thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other things that can be fulfilling. And I realized pretty early in my life that comedy was very important to me and that I wanted to pursue that. I did stand up and through college and into med school. And even when I got really busy, I kept a little part of my life, you know, telling jokes on Twitter. And then eventually, once I had more time as a practicing ophthalmologist, I could explore my creative side a little bit more. I had more time to do that. Really, I made time to do that. And that's okay. And so, you know, that's why I love talking to like med students and residents and just letting them know, like, you can do things that are fulfilling outside of medicine, and you should.
Yeah. And it doesn't make you...
And you can do them both.
It doesn't make you a bad doctor.
Right, exactly.
I think it makes you a better doctor.
Right.
Because it brings in other experiences that you can use to relate to your patients.
And it doesn't let you off the hook either. It doesn't mean that you don't need to be a good doctor, right? And study and put in the time and the hours. And there will be seasons or years of your life, right, where maybe you have to focus more on the medicine.
Absolutely.
You need to put the other stuff aside temporarily while you're focusing on the medicine.
I mean, you know, you're in residency. Like, you know, as a resident, I had no time to do anything besides, you know, going to see eye problems in the emergency department. and so maybe not eye problems for you guys. I don't know. Have you ever done, when was the last time you guys did an eye exam? How long has it been?
Oh, I actually did one. I had a lady who had a really bad ocular trauma. Like,
what's an eye?
Okay. That's good. What's That's usually eye? The response.
If
I
it
get.
Ain't below the waist, it ain't in my space.
I like that.
Lucky
That's
you,
good.
Lucky you.
Lucky me. Lucky
so
me.
You guys know who the comedian is in this duo.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Chris, I got a question for you. So you graduated with a degree in cognitive neuroscience as well as social psychology.
I just done his homework.
Yeah.
Are you analyzing us right now?
No. I'm definitely no psychotherapist. Lies. Maybe a little bit just always, everybody. Like maybe subconsciously, I'm sort of always doing
watching.
That. I specialized in the neuroscience of emotion. which is why that's one of my big soapboxes, I think, now. And particularly, like, emotion regulation and things. You know, I did a lot with that kind
She
of
spent
thing,
hours so. And hours and hours in a basement with an MRI machine.
Yeah, we did fMRI. And in psychophysiology, where you, like, hook electrodes up to different parts of the body to do different things, right? Like, you can... we did, like... EEGs, we did EMG, like face, you know, to get at like positive and negative emotion, like what are your facial muscles doing, right? The smile muscles, frown muscles, all that stuff. Even like underneath the skin where it's not visible, you can still detect electrical activity that indicates things. So I get real boring about all that, but yeah, that's how I started. And it was a PhD program, but I actually decided to master out before I did the dissertation. So and for many reasons, but yeah, it turned out I still use it every day. Like I did undergrad psychology, and then I did that for grad school, and then I turned it into a career in marketing and communications, and all of that just sort of like feeds just into everything else.
So it wasn't understanding the wants and needs.
Yeah.
So if you're keeping track, it wasn't until we got to Dartmouth and I started paying like $80,000 per year in tuition that Kristen decided she didn't want to be at Dartmouth anymore.
Right. He could have gone to state school.
I don't need to be anything more.
I was admitted to a state school in Texas. $9,000 per year. It would have been sweet.
You know what? But then no, you'd Kristen be dead right now. So,
that's true. Yeah. You know, we probably wouldn't be together. So I can't really complain.
So who got accepted to Dartmouth first?
Oh, Kristen.
I did.
Oh, I had to fight tooth and nail to get into that place.
So you followed her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She, because the application cycles were off. So she got admitted like before even the applications were open.
No, it was the other way around. Yours was first. Yours starts super early in med school.
That's right.
And so like all the spots were already pretty much given away in the med school class by the time it was even time for me to apply. You know, so
that's right. So by the time she knew she was going to Dartmouth.
Yeah. It was that you had a full class.
Yeah. So, I applied very late. That was the deal.
Okay.
And so I got the last interview date. I got waitlisted immediately. And like 2 weeks before.
Literally 2 weeks.
I was going to move to Houston and she was going to go up to Dartmouth.
It was like mid-July. Mid-June or something.
They called and said, you got it. I did write like a series of long letters, like begging them.
Like anytime any award or good grade, I did everything, it was like, here.
Oh, yeah. Everything short of showing up with a jukebox. And
I don't.
Damn. There's a Gen X reference for you.
Okay. Yeah, it's Gen X. It's a little Gen X for you.
Was that High Fidelity? What movie was that again?
That was 16 Candles, I think.
16 Candles, yeah. One of them.
Is it Ducky?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
John Cusack.
I don't
remember the name.
John Cusack, yeah.
John Cusack, though.
John Cusack, yeah. Yes. Yeah, so it wasn't Ducky. Ducky's the other guy from...
The nerd, right?
Yeah, he's the nerd from Two Men, whatever.
Oh, yeah. What is his name? Sean.
See, this is what it's like when you get older.
I know.
Yeah.
It's like everybody just like trying to remember things. Yeah, that used right.
What was that guy's name that did the thing?
Like, who's that again?
He's on Smartlist now.
Yeah.
He's on what?
There you go.
Smartlist, that podcast. You know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Nope. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't follow it too much, but. And then he has a new show also.
He just looks like he'd be a host of Jeopardy or something.
You think so?
He has that look.
Really?
Yeah, he has that look.
I feel like it would be musical Jeopardy, though. You know, like musical theater version.
People say that about me. People say that about me. I could be the host of Jeopardy.
Really?
No? You don't think so?
I think only you have ever said that about you.
Yeah, you could be
Somebody
right there.
Should.
I do think y'all need your own TV show.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to see, but
you know, I'm actually interested if somebody, because you know with YouTube, like you control so much, right? Like you control everything, right? Like you can say what you want to say, you can do whatever topics you want to, you can get as raunchy as you want to get. Like if someone came to y'all and said y'all should do your own TV show, but you know, obviously you're going to be on national TV, but you got to follow these strict rules. What do you think about that? Would y'all take that?
It might depend on what the rules are.
Yeah, I see. We've thought about, We've actually
AdSense
worked
is
on...
not bad, actually. YouTube AdSense ain't bad. And, you
know, it's a comfy okay. living yeah, for the it, most part. Yeah,
it's a nice little
Once
side
gig. Once
you
get to a certain point.
But we've thought about doing like an animated series mm-hmm. based on my content, my characters, which actually I think probably would be a feasible thing for us versus like a live action something going mm-hmm. on. Because my characters are kind of cartoonish anyway, right? They're caricatures of healthcare professionals. So I think it actually translates.
Trauma surgeon. Yeah.
I did one. This is a serious face. Video. I did one where the general surgeon turned into the trauma surgeon. Do you remember that one?
I don't think I think I missed that one.
So we'll have to look that one up.
It's the one where the it's called Don't Chart in the ER or emergency department or something. So the skit's about the general surgeon who decided to actually chart in the emergency department, which is something you never do, right? You go see the patient, you get the hell
get
out of there.
Out.
You get out. Well, in the skit, the general surgeon decided to start charting there, and he was ambushed by the emergency physician, and they turned him into
Wrong
a trauma
move.
Surgeon. Mm. That's right.
Even as an OB, I know you don't do that.
I got to see that one because that's actually
right?
my point. That's
yeah.
point.
Even as an OB, I'm like, I think she's okay. Right? All right, bye.
You yeah. get out of there. You chart somewhere else. Absolutely.
That's right.
That video is actually one of my favorites that I've ever made. I love that one. So
I'll make sure I take a look at that. And when I do take a look at that, please just make it a recurring character because trauma surgeons, we dope. You know, we the garbage men, garbage women of the hospital.
You guys are.
You need to send him some of your like problems. You know, what
notes.
Are your character flaws?
I got notes.
I thrive on like interpersonal conflicts and like
who do you have beef with?
Who do you got beef with?
Yeah.
Dude, I got beef with you. Why don't you come in for this ocular trauma, right? I know it's 2 in the morning, but come in, right?
Hey, come on, man. We're ophthalmologists for a reason.
Put a patch on in the morning.
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, I got beef with you.
We're always in the hospital.
We got issues with everybody.
We're always in the hospital. We don't call you unless we need you.
Which is always.
No. You can't deliver a baby. Don't start that mess. Mm. I will destroy you.
My understanding, though, is that you just spend a lot of time down there in the trauma bay, the emergency department. That's kind of like your second home, right? As a trauma surgeon.
Yeah. Between there and then the OR and the ICU and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
You know how it is. It's just you're all over the place and stuff. You just
He doesn't know how that is. He sits in his little chair in his clinic.
So you're the one.
I love it.
So you're the one that's trauma surgery, right? That finishes operating on the patient and sends him up to the ICU and with like.
See, he doesn't even know what you do.
Like all the lines are all tangled and like an absolute mess. And then you just like, you're like, here you go, ICU, figure this out. Is that like kind of the. Yeah, that's
just
the
call
situation.
Me afterwards. Absolutely. Detangle everything. Call me, you know. And,
yeah. Right. You know. Okay. All right.
But they do call you.
They do call. They do call.
They do call.
Jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. I'll be the first one to admit it. You know?
And cocky as hell.
That's a given. Yeah.
Almost as cocky as ortho.
How about this then? We're gonna transition to this because this is a because she gonna get me going, and I'm like, we could go back and forth, but
we really could.
Chris, I got a question. I got a question for you. You know, William mentioned that you left your job to focus primarily on the business of the Glockenflecken's, right?
Yes.
And that is so many different multi-hyphenate type things. It's a lot of work. How you pictured yourself leaving Dartmouth with your degrees, the job, being high-powered, highly educated, doing your own thing, to now dropping that and working on this business. Talk to us about that, how that works out. Was it internal struggles within yourself going through that? Because I'm assuming
that's a good question.
That's a big deal, right? But also at the same time, on the other side, you're highly successful with this right now. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Leaving Dartmouth, that was kind of interesting because I never saw myself leaving Dartmouth until I did, you know, or not Dartmouth, but just that career path, right? Mm-hmm. I thought that was the path I was on. I had done everything up until that point to get to that path, right? And I had no idea what I was going to do. So I kind of, you know, explored things. I did a lot of research into like transferable skills and things like that to try to figure out how to pivot, you know. And I liked my job a whole lot, and I loved the people that I was working with, and I probably, you know, I could have left sooner, like in terms of just the finances of everything, but I really did enjoy what I was doing. But I do really like being my own boss, I have to say. Like, that's pretty nice. Being able to have the flexibility to, I mean, it's really busy. It just never stops to be able to like mix kids and work and home and, you know, work from home and all of that stuff. So you have a lot of flexibility, but that also means you never have a place to escape any of it, right? It's all just mixed together. Exactly. But yeah, I really like it. I like that I can explore my own creative side through it, in addition to using some of my, you know, skill sets. It's a little, you know, working. I wouldn't mind it if I didn't, you know, it gets a little tricky sometimes to be Lady Glockenflecken, right? Like, I'm attached to the person that I'm married to. Hey, I'm not like my own person. You
chose
know?
That name.
No, it's not the name. It's just like I'm known in relation to, right? Someone else. And so I, you know, that's probably the biggest thing I struggle with all of it, is just kind of making my own name for myself and doing my own work within the company. And his stuff just takes so much time that sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this stuff? I have my own stuff I want to be doing, you know? But yeah.
Well, and Kristen's done like an incredible job just carving out like your own, you know, pursuits and like the cardiac arrest co-survivorship. And
I do a lot of advocacy.
She does a lot of advocacy, is really making a name for herself there and doing a lot of great work. And so it's, you know, we try to also give each other space to like do that and explore that. And that's what's so exciting about this, is we could go in so many different directions, you know?
And that's why our business is the Glockenfleckens. It's not Dr. Glockenflecken, you know? I mean, there is that branch, but there's also this other branch, and we try to really give, you know, some balance between the two. And there's a lot of overlap between what the two of us care about, because obviously we've had a lot of overlap, you know, having been together for the last number of years. So, but we do, we have like...
Around 12? 11? 12?
2006. Yeah, we've been married. Oh, I don't even know. I can't even do it anymore.
2006.
So 18 years that we've been.
Oh,
together.
Married since 2009.
Married since 2009.
Yeah. So however many years that is.
Anyway, the point is, there's been a lot of shared experiences, and that comes through in the brand. But we also have our own, you know, personalities, and then like areas that we focus on with the business as well. So it's all just kind of a balancing act.
We can work. We work well together. That's
we have always our entire relationship has always been like work based, you know, like we met as students where we would spend our Friday nights studying in the library before we went out, you know. So
we have occasionally had fun.
We have had fun, but work has always been you know, since the beginning. So we've learned how to do that. Do your own thing together is kind of the
I think that's kind of like
this. Where you should tell them when I asked about the what prenup agreement.
Oh,
even though we, because
nothing, you didn't have anything.
The reason I mentioned that is your story.
You have money.
Everybody was there for the come up, right? Everybody was there from college all the way up. So we met in med school, you know, obviously had nothing. My dumbass said, hey, you know, like, before we get married, should we consider a prenup, even though I was $320,000 in debt and she was $320,000 in debt?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I just said it as a joke, and she was actually thinking about it.
No, you didn't say it as a joke. It wasn't a joke. It wasn't a joke. He was serious. And I was like, you don't have anything. You have nothing.
It's a nice to do a prenup when you have a negative net worth.
A negative,
right? Good. Exactly.
So I'm assuming that never came up in your conversations.
What if I had suggested to you
a prenup?
That we get a prenup.
I mean, we were in the same boat. Neither one of us had anything. I mean, we were so broke. Yeah.
Why are you laughing so hard?
I love it.
Exactly. So same reason I'm laughing.
Yeah.
Quick question.
I've been like, okay, you can have, I'll keep my nickel and you keep yours. So sure.
Exactly. That we both have to pay to Sallie Mae, but whatever.
Yes, exactly.
Got a question for you. So, you know, Will, you were talking about like growing up with comedy, right?
Yeah.
And a couple of questions. One, what's your Mount Rushmore of comedians? And it has that's four. So who's on?
Yep.
Ooh.
David Letterman.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I grew up watching.
I'm talking from a stand-up standpoint. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Oh, like back in the day, Seinfeld was like his stand-up. I'm not as
now. You mean not good?
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But. Right.
Growing
prime
up.
Prime Jerry Seinfeld.
I've gone through different comedians in different phases of my life, right?
Yeah.
And so
don't tell me I watched all those seasons of Seinfeld 10 times each and he's not one of your no, you can't tell me that.
That's bad.
He made me watch so much Seinfeld when we were dating.
I think George Carlin probably has to be on that list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Observational comedy. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I also like, I grew up in with Saturday Night Live as well. Mm. And Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Like, I love everything that they do. And along with like 30 Rock. And they're not really stand ups, but still they're comedians. And I
well,
just
you do a lot of
skit
comedy.
Yeah.
I do,
just
yeah.
Just more of the SNL variety.
Right.
Exactly. Right. I mean, this SNL is a formative experience kind of for me. I remember, you know, I would tape those episodes, videotape, like in a VCR.
VHS. VCR. Like, big chunky tape.
I was gonna quiz you. Like, you really sure you're right. VHS?
Rewind.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Man, I remember like cassette tapes. Like I'd make like mixtapes.
You had to get the pencil out.
Absolutely, yeah. So you know, we're like elder millennials.
We are. We're kind of on the border. So
there you go.
Yeah.
You know, right now, like currently, who's the guy the Southern guy, Nate Bargatze?
Yeah.
He's funny. Really funny.
You know what's really funny is Taylor Tomlinson. As a stand-up. Yeah. I haven't watched her. I know she just got a late night show. I haven't seen that. I don't know if that's any good.
She is
but
funny.
Her stand-up is hilarious.
She's good. Yeah.
With all the new, because now with a lot of the new comedians, the things that they say are, it's not like the old days, right? The old days, you can kind of say anything and you don't have to worry about getting canceled and so forth. So what are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, is it like we're too sensitive or is it like a okay course correction, right? Thoughts?
I think...
Like, would Eddie Murphy still be Eddie Murphy in today's day?
Probably not. Probably not. Mm. I don't think so. And I think we've probably corrected a little bit too much. Like, I think maybe people are a little bit too sensitive nowadays. But this is also coming from, like, I grew up, comedy was such a big part of my life. And so I still, like... I still remember, like, I talk like this, like I'm like in my 60s or 70s, but
I mean, you're kind of looking like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But so I guess I'm not as easily offended. And so comedy is such a subjective, like personal experience, I think in a lot of ways. And my mind really is in medical comedy so much. And that's completely different. You know, it's like, I don't actually call myself a stand-up comedian. I'm not a stand-up comedian. Stand-up comedy is incredibly hard work. I do a little bit of stand-up. I dabble in stand-up whenever I do speaking gigs and some of the live show stuff we do.
You started in stand-up.
I started in stand-up, but
that's tough. It's really
doing
hard.
It's a really hard life. It's hard to make it. And then now for the past 8 years or so, like I've been like exclusively doing medical comedy and that has a different,
which, was that even a thing?
Not really. There are a few people that are doing like a little bit, but,
that
you know,
just sounds so weird to my ears, right? Like as a non-medical person from the
other,
like, what is
that
funny about?
Well, you had people that were doctors and quit and then just went into comedy, like Ken Jeong.
Yeah. Ken Jeong. Yeah.
But there weren't I didn't have like a prototype of someone that was really like blending the two and like having, trying to have like this public career as a comedian while also being a doctor. So I made a lot of mistakes, you know, as I was trying to figure this role out in society. And I learned very quickly that there's a different level of professionalism as a physician, you know, telling jokes on social media like that I have to maintain. Mm-hmm. And so it's very different from the rest of comedy where, you know, you can be like your Anthony Jeselnik and other, you know, Chappelle and, you know, other that, that can
push the envelope.
Can push the envelope a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't have that luxury as a physician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because of the place we have in society, really, you know, because we have patients' lives in our hands, not me so much as an ophthalmologist, but you get what I'm saying. Please don't put your life in my hands. Eyes I can do, but not your life.
I think doctors and pilots, there's a certain place where in society people want a certain level of seriousness from them.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a level of professionalism. That's what I talk a lot about with, you know, not punching down, don't make fun of patients. Don't, you know, there are certain things.
You have to be aware of the power hierarchy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you have to obey those rules, but you can still be funny. You can still tell jokes. I think it's really important that we are able to do that and show the public that we have a sense of humor, that, you know, we can let our guard down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to do it safely, and it just requires a different mindset when you're trying to do that as a physician or a medical professional who takes care of people.
Your ability to segue is amazing, because there's a quote of yours that I want to read and I want to ask you a question just based off of that I think is super interesting. So last year there was an article on you, and you said, when things get a little more complicated, quote unquote, what it comes down to for me is, do I believe that my ridicule of something is justified? And I trust myself, but at some point you just have to go for it. You have to do it and live through the consequences, end quote. So basically, I want to know is, have you ever gotten heat for any of your jokes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because it just seems like everything, because you have tense. Such a huge following. I'm sure everybody, it seems like everybody loves you.
Funny.
But it's just like, I'm sure, like.
Yeah, yeah. Especially at the beginning, you know, because again, the medical comedy stuff was pretty new. We didn't have TikTok. We didn't have all the skit stuff. It was just like mainly is me telling jokes on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a blueprint for like how to do this. And so I made mistakes. I made fun of things that now I would never make fun of. And, you know, taking jabs at patients at like, just, I'll use an example of like a non-compliant patient, something like that, whenever patients don't do what we ask them to do, we get frustrated as physicians. Right. I would make a joke about that or something, and I'd get immediate pushback and people getting mad at me, and for justified reasons. Like, there's a lot more that goes into a quote unquote non-compliant patient.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and having something like that come from a physician rub people the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
It's those types of learning experiences that I was referring to there, because I didn't have that. I had to live through that. I had to just realize, okay, I really shouldn't be pointing my comedy in that direction. And so, yeah, it's trial and error for a lot of things. And now I'm really good about knowing like which areas to not go after. And
you could even do like the same joke just the other way around, right? Because again, it's that power hierarchy, the structure of it.
Exactly.
You could tell a joke from a quote non-compliant patient's perspective about why it's ridiculous that the physician expects this, you know, X, Y, or Z to happen.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
You can do that.
Too,
But you notice now with all my skits, it's all physician to physician type of comedy,
resident. You'll
never see a patient character in my skit. That's purposeful. I don't, because it's not worth it to, I don't want to do anything that's going to undermine the physician-patient relationship. It's already tenuous at, you know, how a lot of the public sees physicians in this day and age. And so I don't want to do anything that's going to potentially make that worse. And making fun of the wrong thing, making fun of a patient experience, that's the easiest way to really mess up and, mm-hmm. and get in trouble.
Well, making fun of health insurance companies, that's punching up. So
right.
Because
they're powerful, right?
They're
so,
cold.
Yeah.
It's not a personal thing. They don't come off as human. So right. It's just like,
Exactly. So I go hard on them more than anything mm-hmm. else. Private equity, United Healthcare, right. all these things. I use their logos and call them evil. And I haven't.
right. Thankfully, there's legal protection for satire. Otherwise, we'd be in big trouble.
I've not been threatened with legal action just yet. So,
Let me ask you, do you think that there would ever be a time when you do only comedy and not medicine?
We've talked about this so many times.
I know you have. I know you have, because I'm like, this has got to be a discussion, a topic of discussion. Yeah.
I'm not seriously considered it. Mm-hmm. There are things that we could do if I did quit my day job. But it's such a huge connection to my comedy now, right? So I feel like if I stopped practicing medicine, which I don't want to do, then the content I put out would become less genuine and mm-hmm. less meaningful in certain ways. And so I need to and want to like maintain that connection, to really be able to produce the best comedy that I can. So I'm not ready. It would take a lot. I'd have to
Netflix.
I'd have to be offered a lot of money to
equity
do like
in Netflix.
Some kind of a
maybe,
Netflix.
Maybe then
special.
We'll talk.
Right.
HBO Max.
So, something. So,
well, I think also when you've been through cancer twice and a cardiac arrest all before 35, like we're both pretty risk averse, right? Like we want to know that predictability and stability is there, and the entertainment world, you know, is fickle. So mm-hmm. we're enjoying the ride and we're having a great time and we've got a lot of plans and a lot of dreams and whatnot. But like, it's nice to know that the medical career, it affords us more freedom, honestly, in the entertainment, because we don't have to, you know, make our living that way. So we can have mm-hmm. more freedom to just be creative and follow whatever we want to do rather than what we need to do to feed our family, you know? Yeah. So it'd be a tough sell to.
It's a big part of it, too. Yeah. Just having that, just knowing that I have the stable career that's always going to be there.
Not to mention, I was there for all those years of training. We are going to get our money's worth.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
All of it.
All of it. From the beginning. So, yeah, you're not done paying that off yet.
Speaking of paying off stuff, I got a quick fast fire question for y'all, because I was going to give you a list of fast fire since you just walked right into it. So, student loans, where y'all at with that? Because I'm sure Dartmouth, either way, med school or...
I started at 320, and then now
in the 140s?
We're at 150 roughly. Mm-hmm. So at a low interest rate. So I could have paid it down probably a lot faster, but I'm like the sub 3 at this point. So I'm just letting the payments ride at this point.
Gotcha.
putting my money elsewhere.
Gotcha.
But we're feeling good. Feeling good.
Who's your dream podcast guest or host? Or sorry, no, guest.
No, guest. He's the host.
Yeah.
You the host.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go.
We've had some good
I'm going to say guests.
Seinfeld?
I still want.
Mahomes.
Oh, man.
That has nothing to do with our podcast, honestly, but he would do it in a hot second.
From a comedy standpoint, I would say either Conan O'Brien or Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really want to have Ken Jeong on.
I've reached out to him already.
Yeah, I don't know if we have any shot at it ever, but like that would be ideal. Yeah.
Come on, Ken.
Right.
I know.
Who's the better podcast host?
Me.
I think Kristen asks better questions. You're pretty good.
Yeah, we're
at
pretty
it.
I mean, like our real life, I think we're a good team. Yeah. You know, like he keeps it light and keeps it moving and keeps it funny. And I'm more of the, like, let's go in depth and be insightful and curious, you know, so it's a good mix.
I like to crack jokes. But Kristen's also, you can turn it on.
Yeah.
The comedy.
I just like, I don't want to make you feel bad.
Oh, I appreciate that. Wait,
but who's so that I, William, I know you, yeah. I know you, you're the comedian.
Yeah.
But actually, who's funnier?
That is a hot debate in this house.
Yeah. We have different types of comedy of humor.
I like to say that he makes jokes and I have a sense of humor.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. What are you talking about?
It does.
She likes puns and like wordplay and stuff. And
well, that's
I'm not
one
smart
thing I like.
She
only
for dad jokes. Are you like dad jokes?
No, not dad jokes. They have to be good. They have to be like clever.
Yeah, well, you know? Anyway.
Like a little highbrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like the word play. But I also just like a really good, like a clever quip or some really dark comedy or... You know, I don't know. I think we both have good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Mine's better. Mine's a little better though.
Well, so I don't know about that. I think what would our guests say? What would our listeners say?
Well, you're playing the role of the funny one and I'm playing the role of the inquisitive one.
True.
So
that's true.
You know.
Yeah.
Who apologized first after an argument?
Oh, me.
You should apologize first after an argument, but I don't think that's usually how it goes.
Well, she saved my life, so I kind of have to.
He has to concede every argument.
That's how it
works. I saved your life. Doesn't matter what you do. Yeah, I saved your life.
Yeah. No, I'll usually be the one to apologize first, unless I just get stubborn and I let it go overnight. And then when he wakes up, he's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's got to think about it for a little while.
Yeah.
That's
true. Got to have his space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me apologize.
I've learned that
first.
Over the years. Yeah.
Yeah. I apologize first. I do.
Yeah. He does.
I do.
Do you need to?
Yeah.
The kids.
Yeah,
the kids
we're
got.
We're going to have to take them to lessons.
Yeah. We got the kids got music lessons. They're probably what are we going to do? They got to
That's
go
why
play,
they keep pacing.
Play
like,
violin
what?
And piano and singing. So hopefully
they're ready.
And if, just so everybody knows, that is a wrap then. Because we get the sign. That means that it's a wrap. Listen, the Glockenfleckens, there it is, everyone. We really appreciate your time. We know that it's tough balancing everything and you know, you got to go to your mom and dad duties and so forth. But this was a great opportunity to just get a little bit behind the scenes. Yeah. Our podcast, we kind of talk about like lifestyle. We talk about student loan debt. We talk about even balancing all of these different things. So that's why we wanted you on the show because there's so many different perspectives that both of y'all bring that, you know, we deal with and we talk about individually. But to have both of you guys kind of talking about these things, it was really great. So.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much
for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks for having
us. Great to meet you guys.
So fun.
It was great to meet you. Great talking to you. Thanks for having us on.
I didn't even hear any banging, so your kids
they're asleep.
Must have been successful. Yep.
That's it. A mallet. Good to go.
Nice. Or whiskey.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you, guys.